Goodbye to Berlin, Chapter 3, on Rügen Island, Summer 1931. Part 1. I wake early and go out to sit on the veranda in my pajamas. The wood casts long shadows over the fields. Birds call with sudden, uncanny violence, like alarm clocks going off. The birch trees hang down laden over the rutted, sandy earth of the country road. A soft bar of cloud is moving up from the line of trees along the lake. A man with a bicycle is watching his horse graze on a patch of grass by the path. He wants to disentangle the horse's hoof from its tether rope. He pushes the horse with both hands, but it won't budge. And now an old woman in a shawl comes walking with a little boy. The boy wears a dark sailor suit. He is very pale and his neck is bandaged. They soon turn back. A man passes on a bicycle and shouts something to the man with the horse. His voice rings out, quite clear, yet unintelligible in the morning stillness. A cock crows. The creak of the bicycle going past. The dew on the white table, and chairs in the garden arbor, and dripping from the heavy lilac. Another cock crows, much louder and nearer. And I think I can hear the sea, or very distant bells. The village is hidden in the wood, away up to the left. It consists almost entirely of boarding houses in various styles of seaside architecture, sham Moorish, old Bavarian, Taj Mahal, and the Rococo doll's house with white fretwork balconies. Behind the woods is the sea. You can reach it without going through the village by a zigzag path, which brings you out abruptly to the edge of some sandy cliffs, with the beach below you, and the tepid shallow Baltic lying almost at your feet. This end of the bay is quite deserted. The official bathing beach is round the corner of the headland. The white onion domes of the Strand restaurant at Baba wobble in the distance, behind fluid waves of heat, a kilometer away. In the wood are rabbits and adders and deer. Yesterday morning I saw a roe being chased by a borzoi dog, right across the fields, and in amongst the trees. The dog couldn't catch the roe, although it seemed to be going much the faster of the two, moving in long, graceful bounds, while the roe went bucketing over the earth with wild, rigid jerks, like a grand piano bewitched. There are two people staying in this house, besides myself. One of them is an Englishman named Peter Wilkinson, about my own age. The other is a German working-class boy from Berlin, named Otto Novak. He is 16 or 17 years old. Peter, as I already call him, we got rather tight the first evening and quickly made friends, is thin and dark and nervous. He wears horn-rimmed glasses. When he gets excited, he digs his hands down between his knees and clenches them together. Thick veins stand out at the sides of his temples. He trembles all over with suppressed nervous laughter, until Otto, rather irritated, exclaims, "Mensch, reg dich bloß nicht so auf!" Otto has a face like a very ripe peach. His hair is fair and thick, growing low on his forehead. He has small, sparkling eyes full of naughtiness, and a wide, disarming grin, which is much too innocent to be true. When he grins, two large dimples appear in his peach-bloomed cheeks. At present he makes up to me assiduously, flattering me, laughing at my jokes, never missing an opportunity of giving me a crafty, understanding wink. I think he looks upon me as a potential ally in his dealings with Peter. This morning we all bathed together. Peter and Otto are busy fielding a large sand fort. I lay and watched Peter as he worked furiously, enjoying the glare, digging away savagely with his child's spade, like a chain gang convict under the eyes of an armed warder. Throughout the long, hot morning, he never sat still for a moment. He and Otto swam, dug, wrestled, ran races, or played with a rubber football up and down the sands. Peter is skinny but wiry. In his games with Otto, he holds his own, it seems, only by an immense, furious effort of will. It is Peter's will against Otto's body. Otto is his whole body. Peter is only his head. Otto moves fluidly, effortlessly. His gestures have the savage, unconscious grace of a cruel, elegant animal. Peter drives himself about, lashing his stiff, ungraceful body with the whip of his merciless will. Otto is outrageously conceited. Peter has brought him a chest expander, and with this he exercises solemnly at all hours of the day. Coming into their bedroom after lunch to look for Peter, I found Otto wrestling with the expander like Laocoon in front of the looking glass, all alone. "Look, Christoph," he gasped. "You see, I can do it, all five strands." Otto certainly has a superb pair of shoulders and chest for a boy of his age, but his body's nevertheless somehow slightly ridiculous. The beautiful ripe lines of the torso taper away too suddenly to his rather absurd little buttocks and spindly immature legs. And those struggles with the chest expander are daily making him more and more top-heavy.